What I found was that I was using my work as a means to escape, like I had when I was drinking alcohol and using mind-altering substances. It didn't look that way, though. I'll tell you, it didn't look that way because I was bringing in money and I was keeping everybody afloat, right? And I was helping and I was needed. After I went to school and got my drug and alcohol schooling and, you know, was helping other people and becoming a professional at doing that, I let everything of my personal life take a back seat to that. It gave me value and it gave me self-esteem, and I never experienced anything like that in my life. And then when some of those issues happened in my relationship, my marriage, it was easier for me to just go into my work and not have to deal with anything at home. I knew innately that I was escaping. I knew that. And I felt bad about it. But I got myself in such a pattern that it was hard for me to stop that. And then that quick, how do I apologize to my children? Take them out shopping, take them to dinner. And even there, I couldn't really show up because my phone was ringing 24/7. You know, so there was always this apologizing, this sorry, 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 what I'm doing. You know, I'm doing this and I'm getting negative consequences, but I'm doing it anyway and I'm getting negative consequences. Anything to just not feel what I was feeling in here.
Welcome to Unhooked. My name is Pastor Bernie.
And I'm Dr. Kitty. And today we're going to talk about workaholism.
And we're pleased to have Robin with us. So good to have you, Robin Butler.
Thank you. Good to be here.
Robin, what is a workaholic? What does that mean?
Well, it means that it's endemic in our culture. Mm-hmm. I guess a lot of people would say, well, what's the difference between a workaholic and, you know, a hard worker? Mm-hmm. And I think where we have to draw the line, like with any addiction, is when it gets in the way of having a balanced life. Mm-hmm. When work becomes your God, mm-hmm. when work becomes more important than anything else, when you can't not work. Believe it or not, there are people that are on vacation and they're thinking about what they need to do at work. Mm-hmm. And they actually miss being at work. They mm-hmm. can hardly wait till their vacation's over so they can get back to work.
Yeah. So, Robin, are there different types of workaholics? Can we sort of classify them? Or?
Well, I think there's everything from the corporate executive, the CEO, all the way to the PTA mom that has to be involved in every activity that's going on at the school, and she's so involved in the school activities that maybe she doesn't even have time for her own kids.
Mm-hmm. You know, we talk about it even, you know, in your profession as pastors. Can we be a workaholic through our service or volunteer work?
Oh, definitely.
Absolutely, and I can speak to that as a pastor. You brought it up, you know. It seems like I'm constantly concerned about what's going on with my church, what's happening this weekend. I got to constantly work on the sermon. I even notice with my wife and my kids, you know, Daddy, do you ever stop thinking about church? Do you ever mm-hmm. stop working, essentially, is what they're saying. So it's so true.
And I think one of the hooks, too, is when we're in our work environment, we get lots of kudos for that.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
You know, both from our employer, because, hey, you know, you're doing all this work all the time, and I don't even have to try and motivate you, so good, you know, good worker. And also, we get lots of kudos from whatever it is we're doing, especially in service, the people we're serving. With our family, it's like, well, you're supposed to do that, you know? And so they're not stroking us all the time, but when we have either patients or parishioners or whatever, you know, we become their God in a way, and that feels really, really good.
Yeah.
And so we keep coming back for more of that. And sometimes our own relationships with our family, where we're on a more equal level.
Yeah. What are some of the negative consequences? I mean, what happens as a result of our workaholism?
Well, eventually we can't keep up with the expectations we have for ourselves and the expectations that we train others to have for us. We find out we're human just like everybody else and that we have limits, and our bodies start to let us know. We get burnt out both emotionally, physically, spiritually. sometimes we're so busy serving God that we don't have time for God. Mm. We don't have time to let Him replenish us because we're too busy giving it out. Mm. And, you know, I've experienced that myself where I'm so busy helping other people and helping them connect with God that I'm too exhausted to connect with God myself. It's like, later, God, I just have to sleep. Now I'm too tired.
Sure.
To where we find ourselves just running out of everything.
Yeah. What is it about us that, I mean, we have a hard time overcoming the sense of just being so important that we have to be involved in so many things? I mean, what has gotten into us?
I think it stems from, and I think a lot of times early childhood and the way we're raised, that the bar is set very, very high. I know one time I was doing a talk with a church school group of adolescents, and we're talking about depression, and I was asking them, you know, how many had known somebody or that had felt suicidal, and 30% raised their hand. Mm. And I said, well, why do you think this is so, that there's such a large group here? And they said, pressure to exceed, you know, or to meet expectations that our parents and our teachers and everybody has for us, that we don't feel like we can do it, but yet we have to push on. And so I think just from a young age that it's just there's this perfectionistic mentality that we can never do enough.
You know, when you talk about, you know, having that from a young age on and how it's modeled and so forth in families, and I kind of mentioned in the Christian culture how that's such a strong value system. I remember being a very little girl and my grandfather was walking down the stairs very early on a Sunday morning, and he said, shaking his finger at me, you know, everybody remembers to rest on the Sabbath day, but they forget the commandment says, 6 days shalt thou labor. Hmm. And I never forgot how impactful that was. And I run into colleagues all the time who, from very early on, that their sense of self was really understood in terms of their productivity, their work. Mm-hmm. Etc.
It's almost the American mindset. You know, if you're not doing something, you're not, you know, producing something, then you're not really valid. You're invalid if you aren't doing something significant and earning something. You know, pull yourself up by your own bootstraps, make your way in this world, and we're just sort of constantly in that mode of work, 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 work. Yeah.
But can it cause functional impairment? Is it something we need treatment for? Can we call this addiction?
I think we can, and I think this is probably one of the most insidious addictions there are, because there are so many positive kudos, and it's probably not going to come to anybody's attention even after the physical and emotional sequela of that. Nobody's going to think about, oh, you're just working too hard, mm-hmm. because you're just doing what everybody else is doing. Yeah.
So we might miss those functional impairments that really do set it aside mm-hmm. as an addictive
sure.
issue.
And now they're finding out more and more that a lot of both physical and emotional problems are caused by lack of sleep. And even the obesity rates are attributed to lack of sleep or not getting enough sleep.
Very good, Robin. Thanks so much. We're going to take a break right now. We'll be back in just a little bit.
One day when I was at work, my husband, who I just separated from, I was, you know, we were talking and he was wanting to work things out with me, and I thought this was going to be the best thing to try and do. And one day at work, I had come to learn that he was in another relationship again. And so that was it. That's when that peace inside of me just came undone. And I was sitting in a business meeting with my bosses from Pacific Coast Recovery. That was a hospital I worked at in Laguna Beach. And we were in a meeting, and I really thought that I heard Tony say to me, do you know what it's like to be broken? You know, and I looked at him and I said, yeah, I know what it's like to feel broken. That's how I feel right now. And he said, what? And then Steve said to me, "Are you okay?" And then I said, "No, I'm not okay." And, you know, I'm really grateful that I had those 2 men in my life, because honest to God, I don't know what I would have done had I left that hospital. I mean, the pain was so great. And they immediately asked me who I trusted. And because I work in treatment, you know, it's really hard to try to go somewhere and tell your story when, you know, it's supposed to be, you're supposed to look okay and strong. You know, you're a professional. And I said, "John Stenzel." And they immediately contacted John. When I got to the bridge, you know, they immediately helped me to understand that, you know, it wasn't my fault, because that's how I felt. I felt like everything was my fault. You know, I mean, all of it was, you know, having my children, you know, not having any of their fathers in my life, you know, not ever getting any child support. You know, I mean, everything with my kids getting, you know, sexually assaulted, you know, my sexual assaults, all of it. I did work, like a trauma work there as well, and really learning how the cycle is just continuing to happen. I think it was so deeply ingrained in me, you know, that feeling of undeserving, you know, not being enough. I think that was always in the back of my mind. What the bridge had done for me was empty me out so that I could fill myself with the truth, you know, and fill myself with love and compassion. That's exactly what I did.
Welcome back. We're talking today about workaholism. You know, we were talking earlier about how there's so many, you know, positive reward we get from being, you know, working so hard and bringing in finances, etc. Is there some things that perhaps it's about avoiding or escaping as well that might be going on here?
Yeah, the dark secret is it's not all altruistic. Sometimes there's things that we're avoiding, maybe at home, maybe they're is a dysfunctional relationship at home with a spouse, and if we work all the time, we don't have to deal with that issue. Or maybe there's problems with kids that we don't know how to deal with, so we just don't. And work's a great escape, especially if we're good at it. That's the one thing we know how to do well. Or maybe it's just not having a social life. We're socially phobic, or we just don't know how to do that, so we just go to work, and it's a good excuse for not having a social life. We don't have to make any other excuses.
For sure, yeah. So what about exercise and eating right and those sorts of things? How do they play into helping the workaholic, you know, sort of overcome their workaholism?
Yeah, I think slowly integrating those things. I mean, eating well will help them keep going longer. But I think as far as trying to get healthy and get over this, slowly making time for lunch. You know, I used to never take a lunch, just work through because I'll get more done. Now I take a lunch and actually leave the building and walk and get exercise for the whole lunchtime, and I'm actually more productive. I wake up. I mean, I'm sure a lot of people are familiar with the afternoon slump, you know, where you have to have coffee or something to wake yourself up to finish the day. And now I find that after walking around and getting something to eat, I feel much, much better. And so I can actually be more productive and do a better job. And I think if you try it, you find out that it really does work and that you'll actually be better. And then again, the same thing, not working overtime all the time. It doesn't mean never. It's this all or nothing thing we need to get away from, like with the perfectionism. And so instituting that after work to get rid of some of that stress that the job causes.
You know, we were talking a little bit how some of this might be also related to depression or not being able to deal with some of the things that are happening in our life. And I know that treatment often talks about the benefits of exercise and healthy nutrition in treatment. Is it important to get treatment for workaholism?
I think so, because I think a lot of times workaholism can be a form of treating depression. a self-medicating form. Mm-hmm. Oftentimes people who are workaholics oftentimes choose professions that are high STEM professions that are very on the edge, deadlines, always moving and doing, and high stress, you know, doctors and lawyers, and, you know, where there's a lot of demands, and that works for a while. You know, gives them a bunch of adrenaline rush and dopamine and serotonin and all those good chemicals because they're deficient in them to begin with. And so they may have some biological genetic thing to where they may need some medication, or again, it may be treating, you know, relational dysfunction to where they need those relationships that actually increase those chemicals too. And so getting help for that, to treat the cause instead of self-medicating with overwork, because eventually that doesn't work anymore.
You gave us a little insight into your world and your life, and can you give us a little bit more about how you deal with the workaholism, or how you avoid workaholism, and some of the things that you're doing just to keep balance in your life?
You know, the big turnaround came with a real spiritual, a real intense spiritual experience that I had when I'd kind of come to the end of my rope with my workaholism, to where it just wasn't working for me anymore. And I kind of went through this experience, and after that, it just wasn't the same. It just didn't, it didn't meet those needs anymore, and I didn't really have the desire for it anymore. All of a sudden, it's just, I had something else that filled that void. Mm-hmm. And that was my relationship with God, and all of a sudden everything took on a new perspective, and I was much more interested in other things, other activities, people, you know, people as in friends, and expanding my horizons that way. And I just didn't feel that I had to find my self-worth in my work as much anymore. Mm-hmm. That just being was okay, and being in relationship with God and other people was, gave me purpose in life, and it wasn't just what I did for a living.
Very cool.
And I think it really relates to the issue of relationship, as you said. So many reasons why we're in that is because of stressed relationships, and that we were created as relational beings. And like you said, having a relationship with God really filled that void and made us really, made you or helped you understand that there was a different, and like you said, not even a desire to have to be that way anymore. And so just thinking about those out there that might, in our audience, and understanding that treatment, and that as much as we might tell ourselves and be in denial that our overwork is good for us, I think you've provided them some insights in the message that this can be an addiction.
Definitely.
Sure. So, you know, I think you hinted at it a little bit, the idea that work can become God. You know, and at some point you have to get rid of that God and destroy that idol and really begin to worship, you know, the real God.
Yeah.
And sounds like that.
Sometimes serving God can take the place of God.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And it's kind of a slippery slope sometimes, and you don't even realize that that's what you've slipped into.
What would you say to someone who might suspect that their spouse is on the verge of, or is a workaholic? I mean, they're just exhibiting all the signs. They're not stopping for lunch, or working through lunch, or they can't manage their time. It's just out of control.
Well, like with any addiction, denial is very, very strong. And I think denial is probably even stronger with work addiction, just because there are a lot of positive results of it, at least for a while. But I think when the person becomes ready to face that is when it's not working for them anymore. And so at what point that they feel that they have the need. And so kind of assessing that, sitting down, and again, talking about how is this going for you, how's the relationship, just sharing your own observations and your own feelings about your relationship.
Very good. Thank you, Robin.
Thank you.
Unhooked will be right back.
the day that I got back from the bridge, I didn't have any cell phones there, no television. I was just so softened and so aware of everything now, and I was ready to go and put it all to work. And the day I got home, on my door was the letter from Homeland Security saying that they needed to talk to me about my ex-husband. And my current relationship, the sex addict I was talking about, had left thousands of messages on my phone asking me for help. And I had a letter from my apartment complex saying that they were evicting me because they didn't get rent on time, because I had forgotten to sign my check because I was such a crazy mess when I left. And there I was with my little five-year-old, and I came home to all of this. But then I took a deep breath, and I said, remember everything you just learned. And I thought, next thought was, God's here with you. You know how to handle this now. And I stopped, and I took one thing at a time. Practiced everything that I'd used at the bridge, and got through one little thing at a time. It was all, you know, things that were just really okay. It was all okay. It just seemed like a lot to me, as everything was seeming in my life. And then when I was able to walk through that, I mean, it was just day at a time, really just continuing to have that that ability to just stop and pause and really think about what the next move was in all areas of my life. My whole story, I understand how God unhooked me from workaholism, just another piece of my human conditioning. And today I work my 40 hours a week. Every now and then, you know, I do go over, but I take from my other time at another, you know, another day of the week. And my relationship with God is, I mean, that's it. And, you know, the neatest thing about it is that I never believed that God loved me. But today, because of God's love, I want to honor myself. You know, and I never knew that before. You know, I honor myself today because I know God's love for me. And everything that I've been through, to know that I'm standing here today and I can still love and give, it's beautiful. Oh, and I don't take that for granted anymore. Oh, and I don't have guilt today either. It's one thing, it's just off the table. You know, it's completely off the table, and that's a gift. It's really a gift. My name's Adriana, and I'm unhooked.
Adriana struggles with work, addiction to work. Now, the Bible says that work is a very good thing. But there are some people who take that to an extreme, and whose sense of value of themselves is tied up in what they do. And sadly, there are many of us in faith communities that also fall into this trap. We believe that in order for God to love us, that we have to work hard for Him, and we sacrifice ourselves, our time, at the altar of the God of work. Friend, God wants to reassure you that His love for you is there regardless of what you do, that you don't have to work hard to perform for Him or to earn His love, that He loves you with an everlasting love. That is who God is. He couldn't do anything other than love you. And so learn to rest in His love today. It is the best decision that you could ever make. At some level, when we struggle to rest in God's love, we're angry at God. Somehow we think that He's responsible for what happened to us. He could have stopped it somehow, we believe. He could have kept the perpetrator from hurting us. And so we work real hard to try and earn His love, not knowing all the while that God's presence is there. Now, when we're angry at God, He wants us to talk to Him about it. That's not too much for Him. He says, come to me with whatever you're feeling. I want to touch you in that place. I want to heal your broken feelings. Intimacy is what God is longing for with you. He wants you. He wants your heart. He doesn't want your performance. God could do everything that needs to be done to save this world all by himself. But he invites you to join him, but from a position of rest and love, not from a position of duty. And so rest in his. He says, come unto me, all you that are weary and heavy laden, and I will give you rest. Rest in God. Rest in his personal love for you. He loves you more than you know. For more information about how you can break away from habits that hurt, contact Adventist Recovery Ministries. And for prayer, call 1-888-446-7388. Choose to become unhooked today.